Okay, guys, come on, come in. This is one of the best presentations going around. You miss a lot. Skip your coffee, skip your bagels and donuts.
You can bring it. Okay, I think we can start.
Yeah, let's start. In the interest of time and people over here.
Okay, my name is Enrico Perfler. I'm a founder of OneMed. And OneMed is a medical device CRO. And so it's good that we can interact with my friend Rama, because we have two different points of view, but these are really complementary.
And Enrico, that's a great point you're making, the complementarity. I come from the pharma industry, where I spent almost 28 years in Lilly and Novartis, and about 6 years back started off with Blockcube. And when I go to a lot of Tori's sessions and other sessions, there are a lot of common people that we meet. But the fundamentals haven't changed, you know, about, and we hope to talk about that today. And Blockcube is one of the pioneers in the area of clinical trial software using a blockchain-based platform or a blockchain-based rail.
Yeah, no, that's really important because, you know, from my perspective as a CRO, we manage a number of studies for our clients, and we have a lot of data that must be collected from a hospital, from different hospital in across Europe, but also in the United States. And so we need to optimize and find the right way in order that we can guarantee the regulatory compliance and data integrity. But on the other side, we need also to find a solution to squeeze the time also for collecting the data, validating the data, and cleaning the data in order that this information, this data can be used for regulatory purposes for you know, to prove that the product is safe and effective as intended. And so whatever all solution that can bring us an impact, a benefit in this direction is very well welcome.
And Enrico, I was always curious, given your expertise and experience, how do you see the financial challenges from a CRO perspective? And then maybe I can then take it from a site and then take it up the chain.
In the sense that we don't have financial issue, but the problem is that all solution and studies are really expensive. If you do clinical research is really expensive for a sponsor. And one of the problems is also maintaining the timelines that you expect for concluding the investigation. And this mostly is related to the patient enrollment rate, but also this can be impacted by some bureaucracy related to also hospital reimbursement, patient reimbursement. So a solution that in this sense can optimize can create a benefit also for the sponsor, because also the sponsor has not to pay so much money and wait so much time for the study conclusion. So in this sense, as you said, how to say, reconciliation of the information for sending the money to the hospital or to the patient is something which is a burden normally, because you need to have a sort of auditor going to the site, a CRA, a contract research assistant. So they go there, they check, they see that procedures were performed, and after that, they can give the green light to the CRO. Then the CRO has to communicate this to the sponsor. So it's a chain, and there is always, let's say, a wasting of time, an investment of time, in order that this is performed properly. But this is a long process.
So that's a great point, because, you know, I was reading recently in Clinical Leader, and Bayer and IQVIA did a webinar. And after that, they published the results of it. So Bayer was doing this over 2 years with the help of E&Y as well as with others. And they talked about that they saw five major pain points. One is task duplication. They said in the financial piece, this is almost 73% of the templates that are used have duplicative entries. Then they talked about manual processes. They said 80% of the steps were manual, 80%. And then they talked about the absence of real-time reporting. And then they talked about multiple systems. They said on an average, they had 12 systems that are taking place. And of course, lack of standardization. You know, the reason also why I was so shocked about it is that almost a decade back when I was at Novartis and I was heading clinical development finance, we were trying to do a SAP for clinical trial accounting. And I went to a very big hospital in New Jersey and they said, let me take you, Rama, and show you how we reconcile payments. And I went to a room. It had seven people sitting in front of Excel screens and trying to do that. And so over the decade, whether it is the fact that we have not focused on finance or we don't think finance is important, the reality is there are $18 billion of clinical trial payments that take place. $18 billion, imagine, worldwide. And this is only going to grow because of the reasons why you've said. But the second part of it is the systems are so archaic and antiquated and people normally push it back because there is a silo taking place, exactly as David talked about in Remedy. The silo data between, if there is the challenge within the clinical trials, it is one group, then it is within the finance and the clinical trials. And that is a reason why I had looked at blockchain as a very critical part of that equation. Because a blockchain gives a single source of truth, it can then feed off different multiple systems. And basically is the key bridge for the financial gap. Now, the Society of Clinical Research Sites has a very interesting paper also to guide sites on how to look at the financial gap, what to do. And even there, when you open that white paper or whatever, 50 pages, 60 pages, even for a guy like me who has had a lot of experience in finance, it is very daunting. So if you look at the churn that takes place in sites, which is up to about 40% or so, it just makes that problem very difficult, you know?
Yeah, from my perspective also, we are looking at blockchain as an opportunity, not only in the financial area, but also for optimization of clinical data collection. Mm-hmm. You know, once a patient access to the hospital and is taking part to a trial after signing the informed consent, the data is collected not only in the normal case report form of the hospital, but also this is copied into an electronic case report mm-hmm. form, which is used to collect only the necessary information for running the trial. And this is a task that is done manually. Mm-hmm. It is done manually by a physician or an assistant of a physician. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they are so busy during their day-by-day activity that mm-hmm. it's not, the first things they have in mind when they wake up in the morning, you know. Mm-hmm. They have to save life and patients, and so they have to do other things. So it happens very often that maybe there are human errors because this is an activity which is not priority number one for them. But still, this is super important mm-hmm. because this data must be correct, must be there, and at the end, the result of the clinical investigation and, the thumbs up or down for saying, okay, the trial was good, is based on the data. So if we can have a system that can guarantee that the data collected is right, there are no human errors, and this data can be extracted automatically mm-hmm. to in another system mm-hmm. which allow the CRO to run the biostatistical analysis and so on, mm-hmm. that would be perfect. And if this is matched also with the payment of hospital and sites, mm-hmm. that would be jackpot at the end. Mm-hmm. So it saves a lot of time, a lot of money, and is guaranteeing that the all the process is in compliance with the rules.
And I think that point is really valid about the trying to get it right across. Because what most people don't realize from a financial perspective is there is one very esoteric area of accounting that takes place, which is under a new code called 606, where for any contract, there's a very step-by-step procedure by which you've got to recognize revenue and income. Now, for a CRO, when you bill a site and rebill it back to a sponsor, that's revenue, and you have to be able to forecast that. And if you are a CRO that has to do public listing of its data and all its numbers, it becomes even more critical, not that investors will hold back. And the second challenge that is also there is that when you finish a trial, which is invariably multi-year processes, you've got to recognize it vis-a-vis accounting standards. So we use what is called accrual accounting for it, which is again another crazy and complex area. And as one person, one expert in this area spoke about it, it says it's a bit like the Sargasso Sea. You never know what is going on right there, you know? The challenge for a person who's a sponsor or the owner of the trial is, if you don't get that right, when the trial is finished, you really don't know what you've spent and whether you're over budget or under budget. And that's the reason why a blockchain-based accounting system, a blockchain-based process, comes in very handy. Because the essence of a blockchain is that you do it on a transaction basis. You do it as a flow basis. That means if a CRF has been filled in correctly by the patient and the monitor has approved it and the PI has approved it, there's no reason why the site shouldn't be paid and the patient shouldn't be paid whatever is the compensation. The question is, how do we know how to do that? And that's where what I think is a very elegant solution is what smart contracts are all about. So if you take a smart contract which automates that process, then the CTA, the clinical trial agreement, can specify that I will pay you X when you have your site initiation visit, or I'll pay you Y when I have your e-consent that takes place. Then it's just a question of assessing the quality metrics, checking that the performance has taken place, and once that is done, automate the payment. And you can automate the payment with an electronic commerce rail, and I don't want to do a pitch for BlockQ, but we basically then finish that process and send off an accounting record. Because until all that whole cycle is complete, it is not done. And the question really is, because it is so complex, in most blockchain-based conferences, you'll never hear people talking in healthcare about finance. You'll hear about people talking about finance in blockchain in non-healthcare applications of blockchain. And that's one of those reasons why we think this has to be addressed.
This is also the reason why I was scared to be here on stage with you, because I am not a finance person. So.
No, but you know, on the contrary, I would argue that you're the best person to be on stage because nobody understands it better than a non-finance person. A finance person can just go into all the technicalities, and that's not the essence of finance. The essence of finance is when you allocated the resources correctly and met the goals of what the CRO is trying to do, you know? And that's and then what happens in the back room or the behind or the back end of the code, that we should leave it to the experts to do. So on the contrary, I would say that you're just the right person as the CEO saying, well, help me with this problem because I'm sick and tired of it.
But in your opinion, what is the barrier for preventing mass adoption of this solution?
So I think that's also another... great question. What I have seen is that there are two separate groups that are involved over here. One is the finance team. And when I say finance, it subdivides itself into the guys who make the payments, which are accounts, you know, the treasury people, the people who are recording it, which is the accounts payable, and then there's the finance budget holder. So there's not only a new group, but there are three subgroups over there. Now, that's why what they do is they rely on experts like you and say, this trial, I've got this invoice, tell me whether it has been done. Now, when you as the CRO representative or the sponsor representative on a daily basis get calls from a PI, calls from a patient, or calls from your colleagues saying, tell me whether this invoice should be paid or not, the priority then is very clearly goes to the top level over there. So that's the second barrier. Then the third barrier, to be fair, is that our systems are very archaic. And you can do the decisions, but you need to have a system by which you can kind of bring it together. And that's, I think, where blockchain comes into its own compared to any of the current traditional systems to kind of give that that strength or that insight for anybody who's implementing it. Lastly, I think, generally speaking, our healthcare industry is very, very risk-averse, and that's why I asked the question yesterday at the gentleman from the Media Labs, MIT Media Labs, because it is not just the incremental benefit that you deliver. You've got to find a way of change management also before that process can be implemented. So that's what I would say, those four things. Lack of systems, change management, the multiplicity of silos, as well as the complexity of the internal dynamics between the two.
I agree with what you say. And probably I would add also the fact that there is still a skeptical attitude against blockchain, you know. So I think that we need also to have a more case study in order to show what is the real benefit for all stakeholders involved in this process. And thanks to that, we can highlight exactly how it works and what is the advantage that at the end you can get. Because they don't know. They see this as a sort of gray cloud. They don't know what's going happening there.
I think, Enrico, that's actually an outstanding point also, because having knocked on many doors and windows and trying to get acceptance of it, the challenge is that we tend to go as technologists and say, here's a great technology, here's a great great advantage, and yeah, the ROI will come out later, trust me. But that doesn't work that way. If at the same time, and that's why I think this is a quick shout out to Tori and her publications, there isn't much awareness also of people who have done good studies. So for example, Boehringer Ingelheim used a blockchain, a Hyperledger fabric-based system for a POC with e-consent, and they showed a 90% plus decrease in costs and time. And that paper is published, not just in BHTOI. If you just do it in NIH, you can see it. If you see, there was a UCSF paper that was done. It was relatively hypothetical, but they were focusing on data integrity, and they showed that a blockchain was far superior to anybody else. There was a third paper published in Japan by another group who I know very well, and they showed when they were working in the cloud, they were working with Hyperledger Fabric, and the cloud crashed, they were able to demonstrate the trial could continue, which implied that if tomorrow there was a ransomware attack on one of the nodes, that vulnerability would not cause the whole system to crash, which happened during COVID time period. So to some extent, we also as pioneers have to articulate these case studies even more vigorously through all fora to kind of get that together. But the fact is, what you said, that people say, don't tell me about blockchain. That's why we as a company don't talk about blockchain. We talk only about it here. Tell me what benefits you deliver. And it's no different when you're buying a car. Who cares whether the engine is a V6, V12, inline or whatever? You are caring about whether it gives you the safety, security, reliability, and delivery of you from a place A to B.
I'm Italian, so I like also big engine, so I have to say.
So let me change it a different way.
Exactly.
As you are, you know, I live in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and you go to Princeton, there's a one-lane highway. So even if you had your Ferrari or your Lamborghini, if there was a truck in front of you going at 40 miles per hour, you would do it unless you would widen the road.
Of course.
I think that blockchain and the systems can widen the road so you can drive your Ferrari down it.
Thanks.
So that's the simple way of putting it together.
Okay.
The other thing I would also talk about is the people part about it. Because to be fair, the people part also are used to, you know, the SAP type systems and all the structures. So the minute you get away from that, you've got to figure out how you can make training easy for them and intuitive, you know?
Yeah.
Because if they then turn around and tell me, go to your clinical trial monitor and say, tell me what has you done. The clinical trial monitor is also going to their Excel spreadsheet and giving data. Now, how do we get rid of Excel spreadsheets is the question. And how do we have a system that brings the two together?
Yeah.
That's the critical part of
filling and the also gap. This brings to the another step, which is how to regulate and standardize the use of the blockchain in the healthcare for clinical data collection, because for sure there are no guidelines or no specific ISO standards for that. So this will open a new palette of standards in this sector, and we don't know exactly how much time it will take also for having this. And as soon as we will have a technical working group working on these guidelines, these new standards, this will, support also the mass adoption of the blockchain, in my opinion.
I think, Enrico, that's a great point about the blockchain standards. And the challenge is that there are already such a huge plethora of protocols that people get very lost in it. And so in addition to finding some standardization there, I would also argue that we need to find a way of having some sort of a bus or some bar which would allow interoperability between different protocols and different structures, you know, so that we make our customer feel totally blockchain agnostic.
Yeah.
They should care about it. And just like we have different plugs all over the world, you know, the basic structure is the same and you just change one element to make that work. So I think your point is very valid, but to get standards as well as some sort of an interoperability bridges different.
Exactly. Technical standard for the using blockchain without in an agnostic way, and also regulatory standard for the use, for the good clinical practice use of the blockchain for a clinical study management. Yeah, I agree.
And then building it on the GCP standards also, it is that we need to find better ways of paying our patients. The SCRS had a white paper a couple of years back which said it took up to 3 to 4 years for sites to get paid. Most sites are operating on very narrow margins. This is the US data. Very narrow, and they normally don't even have more than 2 weeks or 3 weeks of cash on hand to manage it. Now, we are entrusting the most critical part of a trial with such people, and we're not even paying them right.
All right.
And then we get to people who are doing, let's say, a phase one, they're having terminal cancer, and they may be participating in a cancer study. They don't know how long they will live. And I've had read cases and instances where the person has been paid after 2 years or 1 year. And that is also unconscionable in a way, you know. So we've got to find ways in which we can bridge it. And I think the other part is also a very strong partnership between small, mid-sized CROs and sites and sponsors. Because if you see the bulk of innovation, a company like Bayer can give us data to the question by the gentleman earlier on, like what is the ROI, what are the hard numbers. But the actual execution will take place with firms like yours and small doctors' clinics, the Dr. Smith sitting in Camden in New Jersey, where the husband and wife doctor team and two, people staff doing the clinical trial, or the equivalent in Switzerland, in Lugano, wherever it is. So how do we create our systems that can help to meet those needs? And that is, from that perspective, I also argue that a blockchain-based system is one of the most appropriate for something of that stage.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. For given the fact that we have 4 minutes, what about asking if there are questions from audience?
Idea. Yeah, please.
My question is there a economy of scale that you could communicate to the sponsors in terms of, because I'm thinking about implementing any kind of, these big changes, you're going to ask, is there a kind of a threshold for my scale, for my trial, above X number of the patients or the complexity of my trial, if it triggers that to use or considering this new technology is worthwhile? Is there any things that from the cases that from the field that we can already offer these kind of the things?
From my perspective, also small trial can have a beneficial impact of this blockchain implementation. Not only in terms of quality of the data, but also in terms of time for reviewing the data, which is spent by CRA on-site. For sure, the bigger is the trial, the better is the impact.
Right.
So if you have a phase three, phase four trial, real-world data collection, for example, that will be definitely impactful. You will have the most of the benefit with that.
I think to build on your the point that Enrico made, some of it is already happening right now. So somebody who's a small site and a small CRO for a small biotech company will only go to paper and Excel already. You know, the question is, how do we change our systems so those people get away from those sort of quote-unquote systems to more robust and reliable ones, and yet have the cost efficiencies that an economy of scale solution delivers? And that's where I also am biased. I feel a blockchain solution can kind of bring it together, you know?
Maybe I'll just make one quick comment, because I remember, you know, when we transitioned from paper patient report outcomes to electronic, because I'm on the buyer side, you know, from the pharma, once I got these very concrete number, the vendor told me, you know what, we did the calculation. Above 150, then you started, you know, thinking about it. So I think these kind of concrete numbers definitely help people. So if from the field perspective, if we can build the story, offering some more concrete number, publish some things, I think it will be very helpful.
Sure. I think that's a great point, and building up that kind of like ROI cases also will make that difference.
So I wanted to thank you for a riveting discussion on the payable side of accrual accounting. I feel we don't get enough of these things. But, you know, on the smaller healthcare provider side, I think one of the interesting things is the accounts receivable side of it. You know, in theory, we've all seen a bad debt allowance, and anyone who's done a large company has. Most businesses below $50 million don't have that done right. So in what way do you think blockchain and immutable transactions and smart contracts can help on the collections, receivable side, cash flow management, things that are helping on the smaller provider side?
You want me to take that on?
You can go.
So I would argue three parts to it. One is a physical process, which is the person from whom you've got to do your collections is solvent. Let's assume that is there, right?
That's sometimes fair.
Sometimes it's a challenge, but let's assume that that's the case. On the first two, the beauty of a blockchain solution is technically you can do flow accounting. So if today you have a patient who has done a site initiation visit and your clinical trial agreement has said that I'm going to pay or I'm going to receive ABC for this thing, you should have all the pieces ready to do an invoicing really that day itself. So from an accounts receivable standpoint, you can do an invoicing and even do a forecasting of your revenues based on that, which gives a thing. Now, there's a second part to it, which is you should have an agreement that that flow will also take place, because if the person doesn't have funds or you've got a structure, then you should do your billing based on that structure. If that agreement is already there, then I think if we can take out the manual checks, then it becomes a flow. A small site, for example, may just rely on you to do the invoicing. You know, they may not say, okay, I can't handle this. So you can build those structures into the system. You know, so I think from a receivable piece, it can work. Yeah, sorry. No. Last question, and then we go.
Super. No, I just have a quick... I'm thinking like you're talking about finance and accounting. How does tokenization, meaning like, you know, tokens that actually are associated with fiat or stable currency used to power the flow, the workflow, and then you can incentivize them, incentivize the whole workflow process, and it'll simplify your accounts receivables, collections, a lot of those things, because and the longer they hold on to their tokens, you can incentivize them to hold on longer so that you can pay them interest, things like that. You know, I've tried it in other cases.
Yeah, we've run out of time, and we're happy to respond to that because it requires a much longer response. But very briefly, you've got to separate the tokens that you're talking about. One is tokenization of a digital asset. The other is the tokens from a fiat versus cryptos. And then if you start figuring that out, just keep in mind that budgeting becomes very volatile. Because if you cannot predict the price of your crypto at that stage, you cannot get your budget flow back right through. But I'll be happy to take that on in greater detail offline.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be happy to do that. Otherwise, before that, we'll get Brick back some Tori for having derailed her day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.